You've tuned in to Generection, the podcast from the Generation X point of view. I'm your host, Jeff Morgan, and my co-hosts Russ Barbario and Clyde Morgan are going to join me, and we're going to discuss everything from the mundane to the insane here on Generection. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Generection. I'm your host, Jeff Morgan, and I've got my two co-hosts, as usual, Russ Barbario and Clyde Morgan. How are you guys doing today?
Very good. Had a good Halloween yesterday. Decent amount of trick-or-treaters for a cold and slightly rainy Tuesday.
I had one.
We got zero. Zero.
Should have come over, man.
I know, but it worked out just fine the way it is. But next year, we're definitely going to leave the neighborhood. So we'll definitely come over. We'll chill out. Hopefully it won't be quite as cold and windy. It'll continue today. I don't know what it's like down in Atlanta, Clyde, but it was
cold as balls down here. Day. My God. Got the heat on. I'm wearing my thing here. It's going to be like 40 degrees tonight. Got blankets out on the bushes.
Tonight.
Yeah. It's going to be like 29
tonight. Oh, in North Carolina. North Carolina.
Yeah, I broke out the sweater today.
Yep. It's nice. I love the transition in the fall when all of a sudden the first cold snap comes and you turn that heat on and combined with the cold air. For some reason, every year that has always felt really good, like emotionally and everything. And it just in my body goes, yeah, that's it. Let's get the cocoa. Yeah. Let's sit down. Let's get in the robe. All right. You know, there's something about that transition.
Did I tell y'all about my parents getting a cold plunge? I can't remember if I told you about that or not.
What's a cold
plunge? I told you they got a sauna. They put in a sauna in the basement, right? Well, now they got a cold plunge so they can do the back and forth. And it's actually supposed to be really, really good for you.
Man, they're hardcore.
And yoga.
So what is crazy. What's a cold plunge? Is it like a tank or something?
It's basically
like a mini tub?
It's basically a bathtub with a chill unit on it. And you treat it like a small hot tub, except it's the opposite.
And you jump in this cold water and then go into the sauna and heat up?
Or go into the sauna and then go into the cold plunge. It's really good for your immune system, apparently, and all sorts of
migraineurs will do that when they need to break a...
What'd you say? Migraineurs?
That's what we call ourselves, baby. We got our own language. And chronic migraine sufferers who will go through like a 5-day bender of a migraine, they'll do the shock. And that is, you know, a big old bucket of ice water and a big old bucket of hot ass water. And just go back and forth, and you just it does a reset. It hurts like a mofo, but sometimes you do what you gotta do.
Yeah, I think my mom told me that it's supposed to be good for migraines.
Mm-hmm. I bet it is. And if I had access to that, I probably would try it at least once. I don't know about jumping in the cold water.
I think you only do it for about 5 minutes. Or let, you know, 3 to 5 minutes.
You don't notice it after the first 30 seconds.
Yeah, because you can't feel anything.
Yeah, because you can't express it because your mouth is opened in shock and horror.
Your testicles just are the first up few here times. In your neck.
I'm doing this for my health.
It's really cold.
Well, so obviously it's a post-Halloween. So we had Halloween last night. Nobody in this neighborhood. This neighborhood's filled with about half original residents, so they're in about their 80s.
Bunch of olds.
You know, the mayor of the neighborhood did say that he goes, well, we don't get very many trick-or-treaters down here. And we did have the light on for a little while, probably around 8:30. It was apparent nobody was coming, so we turned the light out. But otherwise, you know, we've gotten here into the fall. It's nice cold weather. So, you know, we're kind of transitioning into a fall mindset. So we have a couple of leftover summer topics on our topic list today, and I can't wait to get to them. I want to make sure we have enough time. So we're going to be covering the teenage sex comedy from the 80s.
So kind of in defense of it, I was thinking the other day, there was an article talking about how comedy, you know, you don't get comedy movies really at the theater anymore. And, you know, the theater experience is totally whacked as it is already. But the types of movies that are coming back are either big spectacles or, you know, franchises that already have an established base. But the teenage sex comedy from our youth, I mean, I think that they had really elevated it to probably its fine art level by the end of the 80s. And I know that there were some films in the early 90s, but I was kind of transitioning into that adult realm where the comedies weren't quite the same. But I know all of us probably have a story about one of those teenage sex comedies and you know, what it meant to us. And it makes me think about, there was a story from Jamie Lee Curtis where she was talking about, she had a nephew and she met this nephew, and this nephew was at his party. And so she was, you know, one of the adults there, and one of the kids came up, and when he saw her, he said, "Oh, freeze frame." And then her nephew blushed and the other kid ran off. And she pulled him aside and said, "What does he mean by freeze frame?" And this was back in the day when playing a movie on VHS, you would press pause on the nude scene. And if you were having a party,
Trading Places, you could put...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's the scene in Trading Places where she flashes. And she said that was what got her to stop doing nude scenes because, yeah.
I don't remember her doing any other ones. Wasn't that the only one?
Right. That was, she had said, "I decided that since everybody was doing it, I wasn't ashamed of my body." And obviously she wasn't. She was a poster girl for working out and having a toned, fit body. And so obviously and doesn't stacked. Have a problem showing it off. Yes. I remember really enjoying
she
that movie
quite,
for those
quite
reasons.
Attractive, easy on
I
the
saw
eyes.
That at the mall at in Henderson.
The workout movie, Perfect, didn't she? Was that the one she
yeah.
did? Was in it the 80s?
Travolta?
Travolta,
John
aerobics.
Travolta. I think it was Perfect, yeah.
Yeah.
I never
yeah.
saw that, though.
So
it was a cop thing, and he had to go undercover in, like, the world of competitive aerobics. I don't know if that's right.
It's the movie that has Jamie Lee Curtis in a leotard.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So, and just thinking about some of those seminal movies and kind of the effect that they had on us, to the point to where we might put it on a freeze frame and show it or pass around pictures of it. Obviously before the internet, when you could just download whatever you wanted.
Beastmaster has some really good scenes for that.
Yes. What was her name? Cheryl
no.
Ladd? Was
it? No. Mark Singer.
Well, yeah, yes, he was the dude.
Victoria,
he was
what the hell was her name? I don't remember.
Victoria Principal?
No, it wasn't her. It was she was a replacement on Charlie's Angels, I think, at one point, but it wasn't Cheryl Ladd. I can't
yeah,
remember
so
her name.
I guess they're gonna.
Yeah, there's that. Out. There's the Clash of the Titans scene where there's a little bit of nudity,
which was rated PG, by the way.
Yeah,
I know. You could do that. But the teenage sex comedy, those comedies where it really appealed toward the teenage mindset, and I'll even throw in some ways things like 16 Candles and things that touched on sex themes, but of course, what, Porky's, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and I honestly think that these movies did serve a purpose in a lot of ways of helping to bridge moving from an early teenage to a later teenage. These are the types of movies that tried to capture the lives that, you know, we all wanted to live or be doing in the same way that, you know, movies capture idealized versions of adult lives. And, you know, a lot of times those movies don't appeal to our young kids. You know, we don't want to see a movie about difficult family dynamics on Thanksgiving. That's not interesting to a young kid.
70s cinema was like that. I mean, it was terrible. Wonderful films.
Ultra series.
Wonderful films. Dark movies, not for teens.
Ordinary people. All.
Oh, dear Lord.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, heavy-duty stuff. But that was a generation carrying Vietnam and the Korean War, and they had grown up with fathers who had fought in World War II.
Kramer versus Kramer.
Issues. Well, yeah, dealing with divorce and having divorce becoming a common topic. But so I'll just kick it off and say, like, Porky's, because Porky's, at least to my young teenage mind, had all the right funny things. But when I'm thinking about it as an adult, I'm thinking all that nudity was either sad nudity from the strip club, or it was supposedly young girls in showers. And you know, once you become a parent, you're like, those girls are all underage. And you, I think I think about it a little different.
Oh, wow, my God, when I was that age, yeah.
When I was that age, it was like, oh yeah, that's exactly what I would put my, I'd put my penis inside of a hole in the wall, and I would just see what happens, and that would seem like an appropriate thing to.
You know, I, HBO honestly, promoted that version of Porky's because that was two different cuts where the penis through the shower wall. And I remember them being like, this is the unedited version. And you watch it, and like, that's a dude's dick. I don't want to see that.
Well, that's like the end of Boogie Nights when you finally get the
not
full
real
shot.
Dick, by the way, it's stunt dick.
Yes. That was really good makeup. That was pretty good. You should have gotten a nomination.
It looked natural.
You know, the thing about Porky's, I didn't see that until I was much older. I had to have been in my 30s or late 20s before I saw Porky's.
Oh, wow.
Well, I saw it with Dad.
Oh, yeah, we saw it young.
Like during the whole description of the penis scene when they were talking about the doing the artist sketch, Dad was laughing, and I was laughing because I could understand the topic, but I'll bet it was funnier on all these other levels to his generation. Something like that. It's almost like when you remember in Porky's 2, the whole thing was about outrage over young kids doing plays and
race mixing
salty language.
And stuff.
And all of those things, and it was like a totally different kind of movie from that point. But the first one was all just about raging hormones.
Yeah, the second one was all the way down like the first one, really, other than the same characters were in it. And I had seen that in the 80s, not in the theaters.
I mean,
like
the whole
on VHS or something.
And the Kim Cattrall scene, just for its both humor and
Porky,
for your
Porky's
young kid, it's like,
83?
Oh, that must be what sex is like.
Was Porky's 82, 83?
It was early 80s, the first one. It had to have been like 81, 82, because I think...
It says 81.
Yeah, 81. It came out when I was still living in Utah, and we moved here in 82, late 82.
Well, you know, up until then, the raciest movies that were out were typically the schlock drive-in movies, the horror movies.
And I, Claudius, on PBS.
But this was mainstream. And, like, I'm looking at a clip of it right now, and, you know, these all look like 28-year-olds, but...
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. They're playing teenagers, so you got of-age people playing underage people doing things they're not supposed to. Versus, say, Meatballs, which was one of Bill Murray's early movies, which is, you know, it's got some inappropriate behavior, but that's about it. Versus Animal House, which... It's just a weird mixture of older people, older wives having sex with frat boys, and versus people, you know, doing the right thing and not taking advantage of someone. And it was just, it seems more innocent in the early 80s versus when you get to like mid 80s and you got Weird Science where we're building our own woman who will do whatever we want and turn us into
men.
Well,
there's no nudity in that one.
Right.
And they learn a valuable lesson that, you know, imaginary digital women are to be respected. Because she wouldn't let them. She took a shower with them. That was it.
That's true.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. Was that Kelly LeBrock?
Yeah. I don't know why she married that asshole.
Oh, who'd she marry?
What's his face?
Seagal.
Yeah, Steven Seagal.
Who lives over in Russia. Well, not Moscow now.
They got divorced a long time ago, but they were married for quite a while.
I think he smacked her around, didn't he?
That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. I mean, it was,
he seems like that kind.
Yeah, he was not kind to her, I don't think.
Let's see. I don't know that I would count Risky Business in this list. Although, you know, there's prostitutes in it.
There's some nudity. Rebecca de Mornay is nude in at least one scene.
But, you know,
scene.
That wasn't a slapstick. I mean, I consider sex romps. I consider the 80s sex romps to include, you know, gotta have some slapstick. got to have pranks. You know, those boys. I wish I was, you know, I wish I could do what they could do if I cared. You know, like Revenge of the Nerds. Completely appropriate to take a nude photo of a young girl and put it in a pie plate and sell it with whipped cream. Yeah.
Or put right. in spy Revenge cameras of the Nerds. In their bathrooms.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Animal
House.
Oh,
I'm just looking
House,
at more of these.
But you know, Animal House, that was a part of National Lampoon, so they were kind of already responsible for that kind of humor. So, not to mention all of the alumni that are in that movie, a who's who of comedy.
Well, and then you mix it with horror, and you also get both teenage sex sexcapades along with some good, you know, horror. I don't know that I ever went to, you know what, honestly, I would go to the horror movies and I would be waiting for the nude scene.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, right after the nudity, someone dies.
Well, this was during the VHS startup where rental houses typically were only in like gas stations, quickie marts, and then they started going into strip malls. And I remember in the 80s.
Curtis Mathis, yeah.
Yeah, oh wow, I haven't heard
it's
that.
Nats.
Yeah, and I would rent the schlock horror movies like, what was it, Sorority House Massacre, and, you know, because they always had like a sexy cover with a co-ed and a torn negligee, because that's all they do in their sexy sorority houses, sit around in their underwear.
I saw Return of the Living Dead at the theater in downtown Henderson. That was fucking hoot, man. Because the audience was like 80% black kids, and they just fucking go bananas in horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. I saw a lot of stuff on HBO. I mean, honestly, once it moved to TV, I think things really kind of took off. And you could, a lot of these movies that you wouldn't have seen in the theater started making their rounds. I'm looking at a huge list here, and I mean, so fine. That's really more of a.
That's a straight up comedy. That's like a. Wasn't that a? Well, I don't want to say rom com. I think it was just straight up comedy. If I, because it had Ward, Fred Ward.
I don't remember that movie.
Oh no, it's
familiar.
Ryan O'Neal
starred in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the dude from Jaws. I mean, the dude who played Jaws.
Dreyfuss?
No. Played
Jaws. Oh, Jaws. Oh, the
villain.
From the Bond films? Yeah.
Richard Kiel.
Because he was the husband of the woman that he slept with. And Richard Kiel was coming home. Ryan O'Neal was still with the wife. And he had to jump out the window wearing her jeans, which at the time were those Jordache tight ass jeans, high waist, and he landed.
No place for your balls.
Right, he landed in the alleyway, split his jeans at the ass, looked at the dumpster, grabbed plastic and shoved it in. And I remember he was a designer, clothing designer or something like that. And everyone thought that he was doing like a little, what do you call it? He was showing it off like a press stunt. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, now it's ringing a bell. This is ringing a bell.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they got popular, and
there was a commercial with a song, "So Fine, So Fine, So Fine, So Fine." And the jeans were basically just assless jeans with with plastic covering the butt cheek. And they were hit.
Did you see Bachelor Party?
Oh, yeah.
Much later. Much
Especially
later.
It says 1984. Oh, you saw it much later than it? Yeah.
Yeah. I think I saw it for the first time. 10 years ago.
That's not one that Tom Hanks talks about.
That is a sex romp.
Yep.
Yeah.
But that was an older guy sex romp. That was the, let's see, the.
Adrian Zemed.
All these people are supposed to be, you know, young. I remember Just the scene with the hot dog.
I also remember the scene with the donkey.
Even at the time, a lot of the movies that were like had people who are supposed to be in high school, it's like, if I remember thinking, it's like, these all look like almost like 30-year-old people, but we're supposed to believe that they're.
That was always the case. I mean, I don't think it was until Saved by the Bell that you got people that, you know, played age-appropriate high school.
Yeah.
Until Nickelodeon, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, Grease was like the biggest.
Oh, that. You know, yeah, I remember thinking that.
I mean, for years, it never occurred to me, you know, they look way too old for high school.
It's hard to get kids to have rhythm. Well, so honestly, I think it's kind of a missed opportunity during the early 90s. You had your American Pie stuff, and then and they still sort of survived for a bit
That was late 90s. That was almost 2000.
Was it really?
When the first American one came Pie? Out. Yeah. I think that was in 98.
Sorority Girls was a movie that I thought was, you're right, 99. Wow.
Yeah.
That really is later.
Well, pretty much our lives are cut in. Our lives have a delineating line, and that I'm going to say it's 9/11. Everything that happened before that is this weird, ethereal. That was a time. And that was a thing that happened. And that kind of leads us into our next topic. So as we wrap this one up, there's just this weird feeling of a world before the internet really was in everybody's lives, before smartphones were in our hands. And our lives consisted of friends driving up and down the street, hanging out in parking lots when it was still allowed, going to the movie theater, drive-in or whatnot. And innocent things like teenage sex comedies. It'd be nice to have a little bit of that sort of where nobody was worried so much about that movie because it was, as you said, Snapper or Clyde, oh boys. And that was really kind of the way it was thought about. I want to transition to the next topic, which was about something else that you really couldn't do today. And I wasn't even aware that you could do it back then either. But there is this, you told me about this, Clyde, a year or two ago. You told me about this park up in New Jersey called Action Park. And I forget how it came up in our conversation, but I remember just listening to you going, it's hard to imagine the way you described the person who ran this thing and the way they ran the park and the types of things they allowed in the park. And to kind of set the stage, this is a park in New Jersey, and it's a water park, and it's built on a ski slope. So in the winter, they have skiing, and in the summer, they have the water park. And they would put in these crazy rides, except unlike today when you have, like, safety standards, and you've got liability policies, and you'd have medical people on staff because you don't want the bad press of somebody just getting a broken arm on one of your rides. This park did not care at all about any of those things and took an attitude of, hey, if you come to my park, you know what you're getting into, and felt that just by attending, you are somehow accepting the risks. And I'm not sure I disagree with him, to be honest. So as long as they didn't represent this park as being a place where you could come and safely enjoy a water experience, I'm actually fine with people killing themselves or maiming themselves.
It's free country,
but
man.
This place, I do kind of believe in that. And the biggest reason is, I don't remember the name of the park, Clyde, but it's in Hickory, North Carolina, or in the Conover area.
Cool Park.
You looked it up recently. What was the name of the park? What's similar to this?
Cool Park.
And similar
is it still
in that.
There?
Yes, it is.
Nice.
Yes, it is.
And you can climb this. I remember going to it. The craziest thing I did was their high jump was so high up they had to like blow water into the pool. And I did it three or four times because I'm 15 and there's a girl there at the same time. And I'm like, the last thing I'm going to do is not do this over and over again to kind of impress this person. But you know, you hit the water so hard and you go so deep, the water turns cold at the bottom of it and you can't see it and you float to the top. But they had like their their huge dipsy doodle slide, and it's like a huge regular ladder that you go up, and you keep going till you get to the very top, and there's no sides on it. It's just a chute, maybe a foot and a half, 2 feet tall. So like if you stood up, you'd fall and you'd die. But so you stay in it, and water goes down it, and you just whoosh. I climbed to the top, saw that, turned around and came right back down, because to me, I get vertigo. So I would want the walls to be, I'd go down a tube or something like this, but I had lots of little rides like that there. And I just remember thinking, this is the coolest thing ever. So I'm going to kind of I'll hand it over to Russ first. There was, we watched this documentary on Max, formerly HBO Max, not a sponsor of this program. Mm-hmm. And watch the vast majority of. I got almost to the very end, because it's hard once you get to a certain point where it's just like, I don't know how much more I can take of watching these people recount. Oh yeah, and then we also did this.
But they recalled it as they were like fond memories, but glad they made it out alive. Exactly. But it's like people going to war. It's like, you remember that time we were in France and the. fighting the Germans. No, it was a little bit like that. But I saw it when it first came out, probably 2 years ago. It was a while ago. I can't remember if it was before COVID or during. But yeah, it came out, and I was like, wow, there's some of those people they're interviewing are famous. I can't remember. They were actors. I can't remember all their names. But before I had even heard of that, there was a movie that Johnny Knoxville did called Action Point, which was based on Action Park. Do you remember this?
Oh, I've never saw it.
This came out 2017, 2016, I think. And they had to film it in South Africa because they couldn't get... it wouldn't be approved because of safety concerns. And apparently he got more messed up filming that movie than all of the Jackass movies. He had like multiple concussions. He had broken teeth. He got a gash over his eye. Oh, and he said that he got one time after he injured himself, he went to the hospital. They sent him home, and then he blew his nose because he had felt like snot in his. And he blew his nose, and one of his eyes came out of the socket.
Oh,
so he had to go and have the. I mean, not it wasn't dangling, but it was like bulging out of one.
I've seen it before.
They had to film him from one side for the rest of the scenes because he looked like a dolly painting or something.
Like Quasimodo.
Yeah. So even recreating how unsafe those rides are is very, dangerous.
the thing is, to tie it in with the 80s sex romp is, what really impressed upon me was the section of the documentary about the employees, because the guy,
that's a good point.
The guy who ran it, everyone called him was Uncle Morty, and they loved him, and they loved him because they were kids that probably should have been in a program that had a father figure who treated them well, paid them, but let them do everything. And the employees ran the park. But the employees were teenagers, and if
sounds
you were
like
there
they were having
for,
a lot of fun too.
Yes, they spent their whole summer was them getting high, drinking, having sex in the back storage shed, throwing parties, and there are videos of these parties of VHS, and you're like, wow, that's basically like Meatballs and all these other sex romps where you're like, I wish I could have been a part of that. And I can understand that this New Jersey suburban life of kids and a park that is as cool as this park that lets you do whatever, and it's your friends that are running it and not an adult in sight other than the adults that come to take part and get drunk and beat people up. But I thought that was kind of crazy. And, there's a lot of people out in that New Jersey that they think about that time they worked at Action Park. And they're probably the same way. I'm glad I got out alive, but I learned a lot that summer.
No, I bet that would have been a lot of fun to go to the park like that. But
You know what? Yeah, honestly, that's a great pitch. I'm trying to think about it. You'd have, like you said, it would be hard to reproduce the sets, but it would be a fun, little Netflix series about it. Do three seasons with it. But when I think about some of the types of rides and the ride building process, because we think, you know, who comes up with the Big Bad Wolf? Who comes up with the Superman or the Batman ride? Who comes
structural up with, engineers what, that know what the hell they're doing?
And build it with materials other than PVC pipe.
Of course, you heard about the ride at Carowinds recently, right?
Yeah, yes, that same thing happened when I worked there in 89.
Oh, man.
Exact same ride. And I don't even know if it's been rebuilt or just renamed.
Oh, they fixed
it.
Since you were there, yeah.
Yeah, from 89. Wasn't
it White Lightning?
It was called the Cyclone, the Carolina Cyclone.
Oh, and, was that the wooden one?
No, that was the loop-de-loop metal one.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. They renamed the Top Gun multiple things. I don't know what it is now.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, because it went through several owners. Paramount owned them for a while, at King's Dominion. I don't know who owns them now. But yeah, that shit happens, you know, right? But you know what? The compare and contrast. They also do tests every day, every morning. They did when I was there 30 years ago, and they did, you know, and they saw that it was cracked, and they closed it down and they welded it. They weren't doing that at Action Park.
well, they couldn't because it would take something like PVC pipe glue to put something back together.
I think at one point they had that one loop-de-loop water water slide.
Yeah,
I think some big fat dude got stuck at the top and the top of the loop. And they had to cut it open to get him out of there.
Yes, and you know what
they said? they said there was a hatch that they built into the
top.
That
was after that
because it happened so long. Yeah, it was so hot. It took so.
But what was so crazy about that hatch, though? Let's back up a little bit. He was paying the kids like $100 to test it, to go through, and the kids were coming out bruised and bloody, and from the top. And when they had to open it up from that hatch, they noticed the blood was coming from the teeth that were embedded in the pipe from the previous kid that came up.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yep, because they weren't doing the arc right. They were coming to the top and then dropping face first onto the hump that then spun them around. So it was knocking out teeth, wedging it into the foam, and then the next kid comes around, does the same thing, and the teeth rake them down the chest.
Okay. Not listening!
So there's that.
Thanks for reminding me of
that. Which then leads you into thinking, how can you do that without liability concerns? Liability was not one of his strong suits. And in fact, when he lost in court and was told, no, you have to have insurance at your park, he simply created his own fake insurance company.
Yeah, he was a genius.
And said, there, we've got insurance. They never paid anything, but they had insurance. So he really took an old school neighborhood bully mentality, which is, just don't show up, and if they do show up, you threaten them, and just wait them out. Just keep doing it until they give up. And the state of New Jersey did give up, and the big thing was that they were built partially on public land. And so eventually the state just gave them the land and just signed it over to them, sold it to them, or however way they transferred it, so that they could wash their hands of it. But the town was still kept suing them to shut them down because they said, our hospitals can't operate because they're filled with people coming from the park.
Had to get their own ambulance. You know, they had no one on site to help people. They had a dude with like that horrible iodine to put on burns and road concrete rash and everything else that would happen. And evidently that was the most painful stuff in the world. It was like a rite of passage to get this horrible, horrible stuff. And that was it, you know. It's, on one hand, I'm like, come on, dude. You do have a responsibility. People are going to get hurt. Then, you know, at least it's just good business. But on the other hand, he was right, which is he wanted to create a place that he would go play in when he was young in the outdoors. You can get hurt in the outdoors. You jump off a ledge into a creek that's not deep enough, you're going to hurt yourself. You learn a lesson. You go down a river in a river tube, you accept the responsibilities. But they weren't exactly qualified to design and build these rides. So they created unsafe situations, I think would be the big difference. Like with the Lazy River, he wanted to make it like a Class 3 Rapids. And so they were doing things that, unbeknownst to them, because, you know, science, it would send people up in the air, landing on top. It would cause problems, that kind of thing. I feel like I would be a little bit more sympathetic if they had better people designing the rides, because I am of the opinion, you go to a park like we did in Hickory, North Carolina, cool park, you accepted the responsibility that, hey, that water slide is basically concrete with like a sealant sprayed on it and it's blue, and essentially you go flying in the air, you're landing on wet concrete. You're concrete. Your head's hitting wet concrete. And so I didn't go down that slide very often, because even as a child, I was like, I'm going to get a damn concussion from that thing.
What he's talking about is one of those little wavy things where you go too fast and you become
I've seen well, big dudes on one of those before, and they just...
Action Park has them. You know, it's one of the standard thing. You spray the concrete, you put the sealant, the whatever it is that makes it slick with water, and there you go. You got instant slide. But it hurts. It hurts a lot.
No, the idea that you can get hurt is fine. The idea that you could die should be a far remote possibility. It isn't like skydiving. You accept more of the chance you're going to die. But if you're going down a slide, you want to know that it's designed to keep you from doing something out of the ordinary, like biting some serious air. And as you say, coming down on wet concrete, there should be something to plan for that. Just like that little loop-de-loop should be designed well enough so that you do it properly around.
What was it? Was it in Detroit last year or Chicago? A slide that was built in the park, they opened it up, and everyone showed up, and the news showed up, and people went down it, and it was tragic.
It was made out of metal.
Yeah, they were flying in the air, slamming down, hurting themselves, and they're like, "Yeah, we're gonna shut this down and try to make some improvements." And I'm like, "It's a little bit late for that, isn't it? Did you not test it at all?" And it's big slide.
They did. They climbed to the top. They sat down like a sane person and went, "Wee!"
Mm-hmm.
Unlike regular people who get on it and decide to do it. Or, it's like the person who tries to swing as high as they can.
Or the dad of the regular person who's a big guy, and he lays down. Next thing you know, he hits the hump, flies in the air, lands ass first on the second hump, cracks the back of his head on a
broken aluminum,
yeah, and just slides down like a Raggedy Ann doll. And they shut that down, and that's some funny ass video, because no one got terribly hurt, but they could have. And you know, there were several years during Action Park where that craze did come down to the South, because I remember in Myrtle Beach in my teens that there were a couple water parks, and they absolutely were trying to go for that, hey, we got this big ass slide, and you get on this lunch tray and you go down. And I went down that thing, and it scared the shit out of me, because I went about halfway down, I went considerably airborne, yet I was still like 100 feet in the air, elevation wise. And I never rode that thing again, and all I can think of is, did no one test it? Or is it intentionally made to shoot you in the air, and if you die, you die? But honestly, there were a lot of those like that. So I just did the Lazy River.
Somewhere down the Lazy River.
But you could die in those wave pools. You know, Carowinds had that wave pool, and people would die every few years.
Yeah.
And then that baby took a dump in a wave pool here, and like 12 people got sick from E. coli. One died.
It was, they had to shut the, no, a lot of people got, a lot of people. So. Which leads us into our last topic, another classic from the 80s. So we've been obviously hitting all the notes on the 80s today with the teenage sex comedies and, you know, and why they really kind of defined an era. Action Park, which defined an era of theme parks, which has not seen its equal since, to one of the finest albums, not only ever done, but certainly within the 80s themselves, one of the defining albums of the 80s. And Russ, this was your suggested topic, which it was great. Was Prince's Purple Rain, not only both the album and the movie, and I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about when you think about this album, what do you think about in your life, or in what way was it important to you? And same thing for you, Clyde, because for me, it's a silly story. I've probably mentioned it before. Which is, I worked at a radio station, WHNC in Henderson. I had a couple shifts a week, and they played what they called urban contemporary, which everybody knew that meant black people music when we were growing up. So it was a lot of black artists, and I was allowed to pick from whatever was on the shelf behind me. And Purple Rain was over 8 minutes long. It was the longest song because back in those days, everything had to fit on like a 45. And so therefore, most songs were about 3.5 minutes because that's about the amount of time you can get off of a 45. That's why when Billy Joel sings I Am the Entertainer, he talks about I had a great song, but we had to cut it down to 3:05. So
that's what you put on when you had to go take a shit?
That's 100% what I would put
on. Sorry, I just stepped on your punchline.
No. Because you can deliver that line, and I can just go, exactly. Yes. I would put that on, and that would give me enough time to run to the bathroom, because you get to that whole guitar solo, which I did not realize. I don't know why I never realized. That's the live version on the album. It's not a studio version. I never realized that, but it's so good. It was just such a fine. And I can listen to it, and I can remember when it gets to that certain point. I'm like, you got to get out of here now, because if I had tapes, you can actually daisy chain tapes so that they would play them in succession. But again, at 3.5 minutes, you might get to 9 minutes. But you can't do that from a record to a tape and have them chain.
Back in the 60s, they put on Hey Jude when they had to take a shit. Funny thing about that recording, I found this out, that Wendy, the female guitar player, she was 19 when she joined the band, and that was the first... That recording of that song was the first time she appeared live on stage with Prince. I was like, oh, she was 19. Wow, that was crazy. Another bit of trivia I found out today.
Yeah.
Because I watched a little mini documentary about the making of it. Principal photography on that film started November 1st, exactly 40 years ago, 1983. Isn't that crazy?
Wow. So many years ago now.
Which is weird, because the 80s are only like 20 years ago. The 90s are 10 years ago. But,
They always... Yeah. Well, that's the crazy thing about getting old. When I was in my 20s, I was talking to one of my aunts, and she said, the funny thing is, yes, I'm a lot older than you, but in my mind, I'm still 25. I always feel the same age in my mind, and I think that's probably true for a lot of people when you just think about who you are in your mind. But you do get to the point to where, in my mind, the 90s haven't been that long ago. And they really have been a very long time ago. I just celebrated my 30th anniversary, so 30 years. If I am lucky and can get to my mid-80s, I can do that one more time. But my wife's grandparents easily celebrated their 60th anniversary and then went on from there. But, they also got married at like 19 and 21, so.
I always feel like I'm about 25, 26 in my mind, and then I stand up and can feel my arthritic knee, and then it reminds me, oh yeah, you're 55.
Yeah. And so when you think back to what you were doing, like for you, Russ, so this album was what, 1984, yeah. I believe? So were you in Henderson by that point?
Yeah. I went and saw at the movie theater. That came out 84. Yeah, that would have been 10th grade. Pretty sure. Yeah.
Yes.
So I actually went with my dad. My dad took me because it was rated R. I couldn't get in otherwise. And
now that's a movie that's a teenager's
there's
friend.
There's a little, you know, action going on with Apollonia. I don't remember if they showed her like topless from the back. I don't remember if they did from the front or not.
And then his hand, and I think his hands went down into her. I remember his hands going down into her
nether regions. Yes,
but her regions. It was very, I had never seen anything quite as intense.
I don't think I've seen it since I saw it in the movie theater. I think the one time is all I saw. So I have,
I think the next time after that was Kathleen Turner and what was his name? Body Heat?
William Hurt, yeah.
Yeah, that was one of the next times where something was super intense. Is Clyde frozen?
No. I'm just listening to you guys.
It looked like he was frozen.
You looked like you were frozen.
No, I was just like, just the things that our young boy memories glom onto are how deep inside the underwear the hands went. Because just the idea of reaching the nene regions.
They let you do that?
Yeah, oh my God.
He didn't even ask.
Yeah, he just did it.
It feels like a jungle. It's crazy. Someone told me that one time.
Like warm apple pie.
Well,
yeah.
Look, it's nice how it all comes
back. It's nothing like warm apple pie. I don't know where they got that from, but.
If it's like warm apple pie, then maybe someone needs to go make an appointment. Yeah.
Maybe someone doesn't live with a baker. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe you just need more yeast. So, talking about Purple Rain for you, Clyde, when does Purple Rain enter into your memory and part of your youth?
Boy Scout camp. I remember...
It's time at Boy Scout camp.
Boy Scout camp. Camp Bud Shield. No, Shield. Bud Shield. That was the gentleman they named the camp after. It's in Morganton.
There's so many jokes there.
I know. Camp Bud Shield. CBS. It's a Boy Scout camp in Morganton, North Carolina, in the middle of the mountains. It's phenomenal. I spent several summers there. So, you know, you listen to what's popular. You're hanging around with all your boys. And you're also hanging out with the older Eagle Scouts, you know, the responsible. So, the, you know, there's to us, they were adults because they were 17. And, you know, but they were good kids. And then, of course, your troop probably had some young 20-some-year-olds because it would be done through the church or something like that. So, you know, it was a really good experience. So you just kind of hanging out with everyone, listening. I remember listening to Raspberry Beret and, you know, Breakin' had come out. And I remember going back to school. And Electric Boogaloo, it was number two. And I remember...
With your suspenders.
No, not the suspenders were later. We haven't entered the Chess King era. And I remember junior high, they're doing their awful yearly fundraiser where they force the kids to go door-to-door to sell spices and Toblerone and crap like that. And I remember one of the prizes was a Purple Rain poster on that motorcycle. And,
oh, right.
And I remember, I mean, it was like, wow, that's an awesome poster. You know, and like, that's like the one thing I take away from I don't remember very much from that junior high, other than it was an old Works Progress Administration building built during the...
That's all the schools in Henderson.
Exactly. And that's why they all look the same, because that was a big push by Roosevelt. Get people working. Let's build schools and theaters. And that's why every school had a theater, a big, nice theater, too. And I remember just that damn poster. That is my high school. That's like the one visual that I have of that time period. Oh, and I did break the lawnmower. I think I pushed a kid, and they made me mow the lawn, and I pushed the lawnmower over a metal spike and broke it. It's a horrible sound when you do that.
You're lucky you lived through it.
Yeah, the sound was terrible. Just an explosive clang.
So I dug into it just to kind of see what was said about the album and some interesting things about it. And so hopefully I don't take anybody's interesting thing about it. I was fascinated to learn that it started out as a country song. Did you know that?
Really?
Which song?
Purple Rain. Purple Rain was originally written as a country song and intended to be a collaboration with Stevie Nicks. But according to Nicks, she received a 10-minute instrumental version of the song from Prince with a request to write the lyrics, but felt overwhelmed. She said, "I listened to it and I just got scared. I called him back and said, I can't do it. I wish I could, but it's too much for me." So at rehearsal, Prince then asked his band to try the song. "I want to see if we can do something. It's kind of mellow." And 6 hours later, it emerges the way we know it today.
Wow.
I found that to be one of the more interesting things to learn about that song.
You know, about his compound where he rehearsed and he recorded, and he does have just hundreds of tracks that we may never hear if they don't release them. And,
right.
You know, but they've started to release some videos, rehearsals and stuff. And it's like, I mean, that's what the man did all the time. He used to also go door to door and do Jehovah's Witness stuff. So that was kind of weird, too.
Yeah, he was devoted.
You know, I mean, if he was at my door, I'd listen to him. I don't care if I don't care about Jehovah's Witness, but I'd be like, Prince is at my door. Would you like coffee?
Yeah, sure, come on in and kick it with Prince.
Yeah, I heard he was a great guy. Nice guy.
In the doc, I learned that. I mean, he had written a lot of the ideas for the movie, because most of the scenes in the film were based on his own experiences or almost having some of those experiences. And when he came to producers with it, he had 100 songs already in the can, fully produced, ready to go. And so the songs, all but like, I think one or two of the songs were written after production started. Like When Doves Cry, that was not already recorded. But they asked him, it's like, look, we need one for a montage. Shot. And they said, can you do something? And like, he came back with like the whole song done. Not 100% polished, but I mean, you know, he wrote that over one evening.
Just one of the most complex songs, incredible. Every time you hear it, it's like, okay, sorry guys, I'm going to have to do my part for this song.
Right.
It says there's no bass line in the song, which gave it its weird kind of sound. It was noted for being unconventionally bare in comparison to other pop hits.
Oh, I love it. Right.
It's an interesting.
He only had 24 hours, so that would explain a lot.
Still, sometimes you can come up with something good and raw that works. That's always been one of my favorite.
You know,
ones.
He could have gone the movie route. I think he would have been, you know, just as successful.
Yeah, his second film didn't do very well. I think that kind of.
But his movie, I mean, his music, I mean, that's what he was put on the earth to do. That's what he, you know, and he did it. Is just.
He did the Batman soundtrack. I mean,
wow, that's right. He did, didn't
he? Yeah, supposedly very underrated.
Not the good one. Not the good Batman either. Is that the one with the nipple suit?
No, the first Batman. He did the original score for it.
Elfman did the
orchestration
theme, I think, right? But there's always another
song. Right. Well, he did an album that I don't think all the songs on the album were in the film, but Bat Dance. What do you need?
I remember the Bat Dance.
Right. That was in the film.
Yep. And did you know that Darling Nikki contributed to the Tipper Gore incidents from our childhood?
That didn't surprise me.
Risque. And so that's what helped Tipper Gore get the Parents Music Resource Center and the parental advisory stickers. Darling Nikki was one of those songs that helped contribute to that. So
sold more albums that way. Slap a sticker on it. It's like, yes, we got the sticker.
Well, I had never heard him, and I went riding with my eldest stepbrother at the time, and he had a Pinto that was painted Carolina blue, and his girlfriend's name was drawn on the side of it, and he took me out, and he played, Red Corvette, because his girlfriend wanted him to paint it red. And then he played Darling Nikki for me and a couple of the other songs, and I had never heard anyone swear or say anything like that in a song. And I'm thinking, is it even legal to do that?
Oh my God.
That was a good kid growing up.
Yeah.
So a quintessential album. I think it won the Oscar for Best Song. I'm trying to find the reference to it. He won the Grammy for Best Rock Performance and for Best Original Song Score for the film Purple Rain. So he did win the Academy Award for that. So definitely a quintessential album. A lot of great hits came from it. Let's see, When Doves Cry, we said. What else from that? Darling Nikki, was it Let's Go Crazy?
That was, I think, Let's Go Crazy was the first song that was released, because I remember hearing that before, like weeks before the movie came out. I think they talked about it in the documentary I watched.
Yep. I Would Die For You is from that. In 1996, it was certified 13 times platinum.
Is that it?
So, good for him. Oh, that was in 1996.
Yeah, but it had been out for 10 years. I thought it would have been more than that, yeah. But...
Let's see. It's his commercial peak, with a total sales standing at 25 million copies worldwide.
Wow.
So, good for him. Good for him.
He's got a bright future.
He does. Sadly, it's almost like, it's not like the 27 Club. Those folks mostly drank themselves to death and whatnot. We've had this whole handful of stars that have died from either just basic illnesses or pandemics, or taken out by overdoses that they didn't intend to. Like, whatever ends up being what killed Matthew Perry, I'm pretty sure he didn't go to sleep thinking that he wasn't going to wake up. So many people think they're going to be waking up, and they're not really like, I just don't care if I make it.
From what I heard, Prince was suffering from, like, a lot of hip pain. So he was taking these pills, and I think this is what I heard. I don't know 100%, but the story I heard was the pill bottle he had was mislabeled, and he didn't realize. I don't think he was doing it to get high. I think it was like he was legitimately prescribed pain medication, but of course you develop it. With any opiate, you develop an addiction to it.
Yeah, sure.
I'd heard that the bottle was mislabeled, and he didn't realize what he was taking, and that's how he died. He just OD'd in his, like... I think they found him in his elevator that he had in his house. That's what I heard.
Yeah. I mean, the impact that he had on everything, the way everyone reacted, the way the world reacted, and then you realize, wow, I kind of need to go back and put all the albums back on. I wasn't as big a Prince fan. It was, great music, wonderful, no reason... why I didn't listen to him, just wasn't part of my repertoire. But, growing up, I listened to him, just not as an adult.
If you if you're not familiar or haven't watched it, I highly recommend everyone go to that George Harrison tribute where him and a bunch of other musicians are playing While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and he, destroys... He's an amazing guitar player, and he just, everyone was just kind of like, whoa. Have y'all seen that?
No, definitely go watch it. Oh, well, that's almost kind of a downturn note to end it on, but we all agree he went out with style. He never fell from grace. There were no scandals about him. He was the genuine scholar and a gentleman. He was a man of his time, Umishu Prince. So, well, thanks again for tuning in, folks. We hope this was an entertaining one. We got a couple more to round out the season. It's going to take us through the holiday season. Looking forward to some of those stories. You guys got anything interesting coming up over the next couple of weeks? Anything special planned?
No. Just our memorial for our dearly departed mother.
That's true.
I think you and I want to go to Dollywood.
We should go to Dollywood. We're talking about going to Dollywood. Why not?
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. So. Just barbecue and country music. Yeah.
Yeah, but we do need to all plan a trip again soon. So anything interesting, Russ, or is it just getting through to the holidays?
Well, we're going to have a bunch of people over for Thanksgiving, that's for sure. And I'm probably going to play as much disc golf as I can. I didn't get to talk about it earlier, but I did play in my first tournament this past weekend.
So it wasn't
an officially sanctioned tournament, but it was an actual tournament, just not sanctioned by the PDGA. And I did a 5-over par, and it was at a park that I've never played at before. So I think that it was okay.
Take it easy. Good night, guys.
Good night.
You've been listening to Generection, the podcast from the Generation X point of view, brought to you by Twisted Little Gnome Studios. Today's episode was hosted and produced by yours truly, Jeff Morgan, and I was joined by Clyde Morgan and Russ Barbario. So tune in again next time. Who knows what we're going to talk about? Probably UFOs, probably food or music. And if you like the stuff we're doing here, you should check us out on Patreon at Generection. So remember, be good to each other, take care, and we'll see you again next time here on Generection.